to talk about this weekend, the Mets, the state of the Mets. I thought we'd do it a little differently here and bring in Jake Brown. He does a good job, one of the podcasters, host of the Mets Daily Show. Hey, Jake, welcome to the program.
Hey, Lori, thanks for having me on. How you doing?
I'm doing well. All right, so big picture is this, the win today, the win this weekend, the 5-1 homestand after calling up one of their rookies, AJ Ewing. Is this, in your opinion, the start of something, or is this just, hey, this is a team that is still 20-26 and in last place in the division? Is this maybe something or maybe nothing?
I think it is something. I mean, this is a team that has been lifeless for a majority of the season. So to even have a 5-1 homestand means something. And obviously they got to battle through an absurd amount of injuries this early in the year. But if this doesn't give them life, what else can? I mean, you got a sold out ballpark. You had, you know, I was there 2 of the 3. It was probably a 50-50 split between Yankee and Mets fans. And the Mets came back with a stat we've never seen. I mean, first comeback win in the ninth inning in 2 years, mm-hmm. Who would have thought? And you had Tyrone Taylor, who on my show, I said a week ago, you know, I think the core should be cut at some point on Tyrone Taylor because he doesn't hit enough. And what does he do? He hits a 3-run homer. So I think this has to give him some life. You're going to play the Nationals for 4 games. You got to take 3 out of 4 and try and win on the road and get right. But this certainly has to give them some juice here, which is crazy to say for a team 6 games under .500.
I said earlier when I came on the air that one thing I've observed over these last few weeks, and with Francisco Lindor being injured and, you know, obviously not playing, that it feels like the Mets are slowly becoming Juan Soto's team, that he is the spokesperson. You know, what does it mean to be losing a guy like Clay Holmes? There's Soto there and giving you that opinion. Or they have the, you know, they have the big dramatic win in extra innings today. Who's the first person in there hugging Carson Benge? It just with a, you know, I know Yankee fans might not like this, but with a big smile on his face, seemingly happy to be there. But it does it feel like there's something going on here that this is that Juan's, this is becoming more Juan Soto's team as opposed to Francisco Lindor Lindor's team?
Yeah, it feels that way. And, you know, I think him also DHing some of these games is allowing him to maybe develop some of that bond in the dugout during these games when he's not out there in the field. So obviously keeping him healthy is the, you know, the major factor of why they're doing that. But also, I think he is developing some chemistry, especially with these young guys, and seeing, you know, him hug Ewing and hug Benge and kind of have him under his wing. And mm-hmm. It's crazy to say that as a guy who's 27, 28 years old, like he's still young in his own right. But yeah, I mean, I think he wants to be in that spotlight. And sometimes it's 50-50 between him and Lindor. And I think that's part of why they moved on from Alonso is, you know, you don't have three, you know, the three ego chairs a little bit too much. Now you have 2 ego chairs. And listen, I think he's becoming more of a leader, but they need Lindor back.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
Bo Bichette has just been an atrocity, mm-hmm. and I'm sure we'll talk about that, but he has just been unwatchable for $42 million that they need Lindor back. But it is crazy to think, you know, Lindor Soto can be that guy because we kind of look at him as a quiet assassin in some ways, but he really is kind of stepping into that hole, and it's fun to watch. You know, a lot of times he wasn't smiling last year, and now, you know, maybe Francisco being out is part of why he's smiling. We know, obviously, they're not the besties in that locker room. But listen, whatever works, I'll take it. But I hope Lindor does come back soon because they do need that bat.
Oh, they desperately need the bat. And the bat, the glove, the whole thing. Put him in there. And they need a healthy Lindor. And, yeah, different leadership styles from both guys. But it's felt like it was really Lindor's team and Soto, I don't know, you know, in too often in the in the shadows instead of, you know, not looking comfortable celebrating in the dugout. And, you know, as you mentioned last year, Marte having to, you know, drag him into a home run celebration or things like that. And this year and lately, especially with Lindor not being there, it's like he's filling some of that vacuum, and it's nice to see. All right, you mentioned Bichette. We'll get to some of the other positive stories, but you mentioned Bichette, Bo Bichette. Would you move him? Have we gotten to the point? I said we're done with the participation trophy portion of the season. April went so poorly that it's now mid-May. Would you move Bichette down in this lineup?
I think you have to. And, you know, I think they didn't want to put a lot of pressure on A.J. Ewing on in the first, his first week. He needs to be leadoff. A.J. Ewing has an eye of a 10-year veteran. He needs to be in that leadoff spot. You know, I wouldn't even mind something like the kids up top. You have Ewing, you have Benj, and then you go to Soto and then Vientos and maybe move Bichette down either fifth or sixth. But he's just he's unwatchable up there in the top of the order, and I think he's just trying to do too much. Maybe you put less pressure on him, even putting him down in sixth or seventh in the order. I mean, Mark Vientos is inconsistent. We don't know what Vientos we're going to get every week, but right now we have a Mark Vientos that is hitting for power, that is driving guys in, and you know, I have a little bit more faith in Mark Vientos than Bo Bichette, which I never thought I'd utter that sentence in my life, but here we are. And, you know, the talk is there of can Bo Bichette handle that big stage? Can he handle that New York spotlight? And there's no question if he keeps playing like this, why would he opt out? There's not a team that would sniff a $42, $45 million a year deal for him in the offseason. And, you know, he needs to be able to put himself in a position where he, you know, he's not viewed as a Jason Bay or, you know, as a Jed Lowry, you know, Jed Lowry times 10 financially. I put him at this.
He is actually playing as opposed to Jed Lowry. So before we go there, he is playing.
Jorge Polanco is the Jed Lowry.
Yes, that's fair. I'm thinking I might bat him sixth and move Beatty up after Vientos. And, you know, I think take a little pressure off of him and drop him down to six for the time being and see if he starts to hit. Let's talk about the kids for a second. Ewing and Benj. And, Ewing, I know it's a small sample size, but what aspect of his game has impressed you the most?
He doesn't chase anything. You know, I actually had Ryan Clifford popped into my TikTok live when I was live this week randomly. I guess the Mets don't give him an SNY subscription. He said in the chat, he's like, I don't have SNY, so I'm on here watching you call this game. So I was Gary Cohen for Ryan Clifford, and he said that he never looks overmatched. He said this kid never looked overmatched. He's legit. He's the real deal. And he just looks calm, cool, and collected to play, and you never would have known it's his first week in the big leagues. I mean, the amount of walks he's drawn. I mean, Juan Soto's going to be hugging him a lot more often because it reminds me of Soto, the way he just doesn't, you know, go after anything, you know, outside of the strike zone. That's been what's most impressive. And, you know, he's not afraid to steal bases. I feel like the Mets, you know, we don't know if it's an Antoine Richardson thing or what it is that they just haven't been as aggressive this year. But this kid early and often is stealing. He had the bad luck of, you know, coming off the bag last night, although that was a close call. I love that he gets on and he swipes back, you know, steal second, steal third. Not enough guys steal third. We saw the Yankees do it. We saw Soto do it, I think, yesterday. Mm-hmm. Steal third as well. Take two bases with the struggles the Mets have had offensively. Try and take two. I'd rather you be aggressive when you're six games under 500 than just stand there on the base pass. So I love the eye. The fact he had a homer in his first week when he had three all of last year, I mean, he's not known for his power, but that's an encouraging sign that he homered. And, you know, it feels like he's keeping the Mets in games. It's obviously the whole team, but the fact he had five comeback wins in 1 week, you know, the Mets have barely had five wins all year. I mean, it's incredible that in 1 week they came back and showed resilience five times and showed us some life, something in the second half that they did not do last year. So I think the resiliency, the base running, and his eye have impressed me so far. We haven't seen much defensively because it feels like nothing's been hit in his direction. So he's kind of got lucky that he hasn't a lot of challenges defensively, but everyone raves about his defense as well. So the speed and the eye are what I love most about Ewing this far.
Yeah, today, just another random day at the ballpark. He's 1-for-1 with three walks against the Yankees, his first taste of the Subway Series this weekend. And probably my favorite play was the bunt, because by all accounts, he's never been, you know, because he's always been the best player at every level on every team he's been on, he hasn't been asked to bunt in the minor leagues. And here he was being asked for the first time to put down a sacrifice bunt in the 10th inning against the Yankees and against a pitcher in Tim Hill that is, you know, lefty, really hard, a funky arm angle and really hard to do. And just to, and the Yankees are pinching in at the corners and all of that, and to just calmly stand in there like, yeah, no big deal. I'm just going to lay down the perfect bunt and maybe almost beat it out to first base.
Bring back more bunts, Lori. Like, they finally, Hayden Sanger had the squeeze bunt. That was literally my favorite play of the season. Anyone who watches or follows me knows I have a weird obsession with bunts. I love when they bunt because Carlos Mendoza has been the anti-bunt. That's what it, you know, his nickname is to me. Is he never bunts. And this week he has squeeze bunt and the Ewing bunt, and it shouldn't be rocket science. You see, yeah, Jazz Chisholm, you know, bunt the ball over the pitcher for a base hit. Like, bunts cause chaos, and when the Mets have half of their team on the injured list, you're going to have to get creative and moving guys over, and that was, you know, it wasn't really creative. That was the obvious thing there, but laying it down should not be rocket science. And
it's not rocket science, but against Tim Hill, lefty in extra innings, when you've never been asked to do it before in your first week in the big leagues, impressive as hell to pull it off. The execution there from Ewing, I thought, was really impressive. All right, before I let you go, let's turn pitching for a moment. And what would you do at this point with Sean Manaea?
I mean, I don't want to say send him on a one-way ticket to the moon. I think Sean Manaea is a great guy. I think you had to sign him that contract. The good thing is they were able to defer essentially one of the years. So it's either this year or last year. You could say it was the throwaway year. We'll pay you down the line, the Shohei Ohtani special. But you're at a point he's unpitchable. And I don't know if he needs to consult with a doctor or something to get those bone chips removed. That's something he probably should have did in July. Now, I think he was in a spot where he's like, I need to come back and help the team. He decided to just not take care of that and just let it heal on its own. But, you know, obviously you can't have a phantom IL trip. It's not allowed, but there's got to be something with that elbow that gets fixed. And if not, you might just have to eat the 30 plus 35 million that you owe him. And obviously it's a ton of money, but in the Steve Cohen era, the Mets have done it with other players before. And you're at a point where he's just unusable. And I just hated, and I get he doesn't throw, you know, the only people he throws under the bus is Harrison, the replay dude.
Yeah.
But, and Ibanez, who got cut the next game. Those are the only two people Mendoza thrown under the bus. But I didn't love that he was saying Manaea did a great job, and he thought he was, I mean, what a great job. He gave up three runs. I mean, he didn't really do a great job out of the bullpen. He's really been bad. And I don't know if there's not much else he could say. He can't really just crap on him, but I don't know. I think they're in a spot where you have to consider cutting him to keep a pitcher on the roster that's really a mop-up guy is not worth it. And luckily, they were resilient today, but if they lost this game, you're thinking to yourself, why the heck did they use? And I get they used a bunch of arms yesterday. They're not going back-to-back on guys. I understand that, but why would you use the guy in a tie game? He's a mop-up pitcher. So I'd say two things. One, either cut him, or two, have him consult with a doctor and figure out the elbow, and maybe there's something there that you shut him down for the season, or you shut him down for a long period of time. But keeping him on this roster over some other young pieces, again, you got AJ Minter coming back any day now. Like, to me, I would just have Minter replace Manaea. That's a pretty easy fix, yep, since Manaea is not really that 4 or 5 inning guy anymore. He's essentially a 1 or 2 inning pitcher. So is AJ Minter. So those are the kind of options I would do, but there's no real easy option because he's beloved in that clubhouse. A lot of people like him, but he just stinks right now.
Well, if he did get bone chips removed in his elbow, he could probably still be the clubhouse chess master. And there's a role there, mm-hmm, you know? So mm-hmm. Let him do that. All right. Then lastly, on the Clay Holmes news and replacing that spot in the starting rotation, it does not sound yet like the guys at AAA are quite ready to be called up for that spot. Are you, one of the things is one of the possibilities that may make sense to stretch out Tobias Myers? I know it further hits the bullpen, but maybe then easier to find some guys for the bullpen and put Myers, stretch him out and put him in the starting rotation for the time being?
Yeah, I think it's one of two things. It's either Myers or it's this kid Zach Thornton in the minors. He lines up that his next start would be Wednesday. He just pitched 6 scoreless innings for Syracuse 2 days ago, so it would line up perfectly to call him up. I think the Mets have to consider that, and maybe they do a Myers-Thornton, you know, piggyback situation. Mm-hmm. Wenninger would have been the guy, but he got pulled early today. Yep. He had no command today. Yep. So Wenninger is not going to be the guy yet, although I would like to, I think Wenninger any week now is going to be that guy once he bounces back. I mean, he's got a sub 1.5 ERA in AAA, but I think they might consider this kid Thornton. I just think the timing lines up where he's due to pitch Wednesday. You have Myers as a backup where you could piggyback the two. So I'd go Thornton.
All right. Jake Brown, host of the Mets Daily Show. Jake, appreciate the time, and we'll catch up with you down the road.
Thanks, Lori. Appreciate it.